You're listening to the Finding Your Future in Food Systems podcast, hosted by the North American Food Systems Network. The North American Food Systems Network is a professional development association for people working to strengthen local and regional food systems. In this podcast, we present different businesses and organizations across Europe working to develop food systems in their communities and across the continent. In this episode, we'll be talking about La Flor with Laura. La Flor hand-makes chocolates from 5 single-origin cacaos made in Zurich. Our goal here is to introduce organizations that you may be able to learn from and get involved with. Now let's dive in and meet our guest.
So first of all, thank you so much for inviting me to the interview. I love talking about food and sustainability and everything that's behind it. I think it's such a beautiful world. I started working or getting interested in food and everything behind it 20 years ago when I was living in New York, and just realizing that the food system, that there's a lot of edges and difficulties in the food system and how food can taste differently, like a corn, how different qualities there are. And then once you start looking deeper, like I just couldn't stop. So I ended up in Italy at UNISC and doing a master's in food culture and communications. That's more than 10 years ago. So, and I've been working in it since.
Amazing.
And it's funny because like people ask me, so what's your job? I'm like, well, I'm very Swiss. I'm like a chocolate maker. And but chocolate is just, I got to know chocolate better at UNISC. We had classes and we also went to visit two chocolate producers in Italy. And Switzerland is so close to chocolate, and you associate Switzerland with chocolate, but people here have no knowledge about chocolate, and it's more a candy. And La Flor really tries to give back the value to the product through producing chocolate, but also we have a chocolate factory in the center of Zurich. So actually today is Thursday afternoon, so we have open chocolate factory, so people can come and do the tour and buy chocolate. Five different chocolates. So everybody that works in kind of the bean to bar transparent production of food, or in this case chocolate, we try to give the value to the product. And it's difficult because our prices are high, or it's like the real price, and how do you justify that? Because we don't have a fancy shop where you walk in and it's super shiny and, you know, with the teak wood, and it doesn't create an environment that makes you want to spend more, which high-end shops do. But it's more how do we transfer an appreciation for a product that then you understand and you're willing to pay more for the product and understand the quality differences. It's really the, you know, for there's kind of the chocolate candy when, you know, we talk about the Mars bars or Hershey chocolate, that's really more sugar than cacao. And what we're trying to for our consumers to realize, like, hey, it's actually a healthy product. It's not, doesn't need to be that much sugar inside. And we all eat chocolate every day and we love it, and it doesn't make us fat or unhealthy, or because there's so many good things in cacao.
Yeah, so how can you tell the difference between, you know, the chocolate candy versus a high quality chocolate bar? If I was like, if you're a consumer kind of just in a grocery store, like, and you know, there's a lot of greenwashing with labels these days, I feel like it's difficult sometimes. So kind of if I was like looking at a bunch of different chocolate bars, what are the kind of things I should be looking for?
Well, the first thing I would do is always you look at the ingredient list, and what's inside the most is listed first. So if you look at the ingredient list and sugar comes before cacao, that means you're buying candy, not chocolate. So the first ingredients should always be cacao and then sugar. And then comes maybe cacao butter and milk if you buy milk chocolate, or if it's oat milk or something like that. So first of all, you look at what's the first thing listed on the ingredient list. And then you look at, is there any other things added? Is there emulsifiers added? Is there vanilla added, like flavoring added? So you don't want to really buy chocolate with vanilla necessarily inside, or with additives. And then is somewhere on the packaging written where the cacao comes from? that still doesn't mean it's good chocolate, because as you say, like in a supermarket, it can be written like Ghana fine flavored chocolate or something. So you look at where does it come from. Ideally, it's written more than the country. If it's written like the name of a farm or a region, that always like makes it more specific. And the more specific it comes from, the people generally tend to pay more attention to their cacao. Like in our case, it's always the name of the farm or the origin. Sometimes it's a group of farmers or like a community. And they're so proud that their name is on the chocolate bar that they would never send us cacao that's not great to make chocolate with. But as a consumer, I think that those are good things to look at, the origin, the ingredient list. And then if there's like kind of flavor profiles written on the bar, like, you know, sometimes they're written like, yeah, notes of honey or nuts, or because then you realize, okay, the people were thinking about flavor.
Yeah. And so for those that don't know, could you kind of go into a little bit of the problems of chocolate in the food systems? Like, why is chocolate so important to look at, and the importance of like traceability with chocolate bars?
Well, because cacao is a commodity product. So that means it's traded, which if production, if yields go up, you have more in the market, price goes down. So it's a little bit of weird incentive. And also there's no traceability. And I don't know, I can't remember the exact numbers, but it's like over 90% of production comes from Côte d'Ivoire, and it goes through a lot of people's hands, and you have no traceability. And if it goes through a lot of people's hands, the people that produces the cacao, the farmers usually, they have the trees, they harvest, they open the fruit up, they take out the seeds, then they ferment the seeds and they dry it, and then they sell the dried seeds. In the fermentation process, all the flavors develop. Not all of it. It also depends on the variety and how you take care of the trees. But let's say in general, the fermentation process is really important. And it's a spontaneous fermentation. It's like as if you do sourdough bread, and it needs a lot of attention and focus and know-how. And if you don't do that correctly, if you don't care, if you need money fast, you do that, you kind of don't ferment, and then your cacao is very bitter. But it doesn't matter, because you sell the cacao to the next guy, you just get the daily price for it, and you just need the cash for your family to survive, you know? And that incentive doesn't create good quality cacao, unfortunately, and that's how the main system works. A lot of small scale farms. I'm not an expert in industrial cacao chocolate production. So I've never been to Côte d'Ivoire, so I've never seen it. So I can't really talk so well about it. But the movement we're in is really much more focused on that. It's always good quality food is usually always coupled to also taking care of nature and like biodiversity, and it always goes hand in hand. That's why the more you work with it, the more beautiful it becomes, the whole system. So I have more knowledge in that than in kind of the industrial production process.
No, it's perfect. Do you want to talk about your process at La Flor and how you got started, and now what does kind of an operation look like for chocolate?
Mm-hmm. So at the moment, we work with cacao from 5 origins. Sometimes it's a farm, sometimes it's a group of people, and we get all the beans by boat, and then one cacao from Colombia we get by sailboat, and it arrives here. And then the first thing we do is we peel the beans, which actually another chocolate company does for us, because we're too small. You have the bean, and so the bean is fermented and dried at origin. So we receive the cacao bean. It has a little shell around it. So the first thing you do is either you roast and then peel, or you peel and then roast. So we peel first, then we roast the nibs in the oven, in a normal convection oven, 10 minutes. And each cacao has a little bit of different roast profile, depending on each recipe. And then we put the cacao nibs that are roasted into a mélangeur called, it's a stone grinder. And it's two stones that turn in this kind of pot, big, how do you say, like big pot?
Yeah, like a pot.
And it takes 4 days. Mm-hmm. And it takes 4 days because through the grinding, there's a friction, heat is created. And so the chocolate mass through the grinding, the chocolate is created and becomes, because we want the chocolate to be really fine in the mouth. No? And it takes 4 days for that process to happen. And it also, the air that you pull into the chocolate mass creates the nice flavor, which is called the conching. So you have like the grinding and the conching. We do in one. So in the mélangeur, we create the chocolate mass. And after we have the chocolate mass, we put it, you still have to put it into a bar. So you, when you take out the chocolate mass out of the machines, you have to temper the chocolate, which means tempering the chocolate is that you have the fat crystals and the sugar crystals that need to bind. So you have that nice crack. Kind of like that. The snap with the chocolate, and also the shininess. And that you do through the tempering. And then through the tempering machine, we then put it into our bars. And after 15 minutes of cooling down, the chocolate is hard again. And then we package the chocolate. And we have 5 different dark chocolates. And then we also do a dark milk chocolate, which in Switzerland, more than 90% of the chocolate sold is milk chocolate. So we do sell a lot of milk chocolate. Then we make one chocolate with cacao from Venezuela. We put in a corn flour, which is a toasted corn flour from the Italian part of Switzerland. It's a slow food presidio. So it's like only one mill left in Switzerland that produces this flour. And it's kind of our popcorn chocolate. It has a really nice flavor. It's more playful. Yeah. And it's a very fun chocolate and has a beautiful story behind it. So we do also make chocolate with additions. So, but the additions all also tell their story. And I think that's also something that's interesting for chocolate makers, is to make chocolate with inclusions that tell stories, not just, you know, you have the classic hazelnut. But where does the hazelnut come from? What's the story behind it? But this is chocolate with corn, but there's so much. We have this salt chocolate that with alpine salt crystals inside, also like a Swiss salt, which people love.
Yeah. It sounds delicious.
We also enrobe chocolate and things also with chocolate, because we create chocolate bars, but also, you know, you can, chocolate bars is kind of, since we're chocolate makers, no, we're not chocolatiers, so we don't make pralines and things like that. So what we decided to do is chocolate and robe things. So we have Piemontese hazelnuts, of course. We have really nice almonds that we also work with directly from Sicily, the group. And then we have old bread that's like an upcycling product. So it's bread from bakeries that is unsold, and it's cut up into pieces, and then we enrobe it with chocolate. So it's like it tastes a little bit like Maltesers.
Oh, okay. That's so interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. And people love it. It's like, we call them breadcrumbs, but breadcrumbs with chocolate. Yeah. So we're always thinking about, you know, other products that we can create with the chocolate that people, and now we're working on a hot chocolate that we will release for the fall season.
Oh, that's so exciting. That's perfect timing.
Yes. Yeah. What we also do a lot is the events and tours and classes, because people, once you smell how it's created, and once you have the fruit, like we serve the people the fruit juice to drink and the beans, and then you just kind of create a different appreciation for chocolate, and you don't can just eat it quickly without thinking about it.
Yeah. So you talked a lot about like the importance of like education around chocolate and kind of the storytelling with cacao. And so I'm just curious to know like the impact that you have on the community around the floor. And like, so do you see like a direct impact with people and their purchasing patterns, or do you have a lot of customers coming in now that are like, where's my cacao coming from? Or kind of what's the role of education in your community?
Mm-hmm. I think it's a really big one, because people, we do a lot of markets and events, and a lot of people, when I say, do you want to try chocolate? They'll be like, oh, I don't like dark chocolate. It's too bitter. And then kind of, and me too. I mean, I don't like the supermarket dark chocolate. It's no fun to eat. No. And I totally understand when somebody tells me I don't like dark chocolate. because I know where they're coming from. So it's kind of like that. And then people will be like, oh, I didn't know I like dark chocolate. And then they're like, thank you so much for introducing me to that this wow. world. And at the end, you know, if they buy art chocolate, I mean, it's kind of like drinking wine. No, you don't buy the same bottle always. You buy ones from this producer, then you buy from this producer. But when you kind of know your style, or you say like, oh, this is what I like. So getting people to eat darker chocolate with less sugar, but higher quality. So they appreciate the flavor differences. Like we have, we're four chocolate makers in Zurich that produce print bar chocolate. So, and for example, we don't have anything from Ghana or from Indonesia. We don't have mm-hmm. cacao, but other producers here in the city have. So no, you can eat a chocolate bar from Colombia from us. Then you can buy something from Ghana, from Garcoa, or Peru, from an like, which is nice. And that's kind of what we're trying to do. I do these chocolate workshops where I also we do the blind degustations. It's kind of like a wine workshop with chocolate, but we also flavor and taste a lot of other producers' chocolate, because I think it's important to just get people to understand the different flavor varieties. Thanks to our biodiversity and origins, we have different flavor profiles in the chocolate, which is really nice. And then people get into it and they start discovering, and then they keep on coming back. So that's kind of how we build a community.
That's amazing. And how did you select the farms that you source your cacao from?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, we kind of got recommended by people, and then we went to visit and they recommend us the next people. We've also, one of my business partners has been to Ghana to visit a farm, but then kind of came back and was like, no, this is not. I mean, it's really the connections. No, you just go there, you meet the people. And even if, you know, it's like always a thing. Yeah, well, are you organic certified? But then you go on the farm and you stay with them several days, you see like what they eat, what they drink, how they treat the people, how they're
right.
And then you're like, okay, this is somebody I want to work with. And with cacao, it's really a long-term relationship you work with. And also I do have a connection from UNISC. Okay. One student, Manlio La Rotonda, he's from Torino. And he lives in Colombia, and he's kind of our Colombia connection. He has his own chocolate. He makes great, amazing chocolate in Colombia called Disidiente. And he's, for example, my connection in Colombia. So the farmers that we know, it's through him.
Okay.
So the UNISC connection. Yes.
UNISC. Beautiful.
Yeah.
And so you also talked about how sustainability plays a big role in what you do, and it's important. So I was curious to know kind of how sustainability plays a role in your choice of packaging and labeling your products.
Mm-hmm. So it's a mindset. So no, so it's not only, yeah, how do we work, what goes inside of our chocolate, how do we package it? It's all compostable packaging. It's still not perfect. You know, it's produced in England and it has different compounds in it, but it is compostable. It's plastic free, it's aluminium free. So we're trying on a lot of levels, but also for me, like that, just the health of our team is important. We kind of have this lunch system because I really don't want our team to eat packaged food and fast food and sandwiches for lunch. So we have this system where we cook. I go to the farmer's market and we also have like a farm subscription. So thinking holistically about everything. Also, we have our product is delivered by bicycle. We don't own cars.
Wow.
It's just the word sustainability is such a difficult one. I think once you start working with it, you realize it's not that simple. And mm-hmm. but you try on a lot of different levels. So it's like inside of the production, or we reuse, we're in a co-working space here. So everybody, we reuse all the boxes from everybody. So we package all our orders in used boxes. And then we just put a sticker on it being like, hey, this box is fine. You know, we just reuse the boxes, because then there's also less cardboard that needs to be recycled, and everybody brings us their boxes and we have from small to big, but then they're just branded with another brand, but we put a sticker over it. And I think just thinking in a lot of different levels, starting with ourselves and how we act every day.
That's incredible, the bike delivery. And so that made me think, do you only sell locally, or do you sell, in more specifically, do you sell worldwide?
Yeah, no, not yet. We are starting to ship. You can order online and we'll send it to you and by post. It's just really expensive to send, but if somebody really wants it, we'll ship it to you. But it just proportionally how much a chocolate costs and then the shipping costs. But we have done it and we do it. But we don't have any shops. We do have one shop in Torino that sells our chocolate, but we don't really sell abroad so much because we still, this is our sixth business year, and we still have enough to cover in Switzerland. We don't really need to go abroad yet. And if you want to have our chocolate, you can just come visit.
That sounds amazing. So you said like education is a big part. Have you ever had volunteers kind of work in the like to see like kind of behind the scenes with you, or mostly do you have full-time staff?
It's a mix. We have full-time staff and we have interns always. We actually today somebody from UNISC coming to work with us
Oh,
again.
amazing.
So we have full-time people, we have part-time people, we have interns, and we do, as you mentioned, always have kind of volunteers that just love the product and they'll come and help out. So it's a mix.
Yeah. Can you tell me a little bit more about the internship? Just because I think a lot of our listeners are either, looking to transition into food systems or are looking for different opportunities. And so is it open to anyone around the world or is it mostly local?
At the moment, that's how I did the transition too, because I wasn't working in the food system. I was working in the
Oh,
design
okay.
field. And then it took me a while. It took me about 3 years to do the transition. I was first looking at the food studies program at NYU. And then I saw the at UNISC, the master's program. And I was like, wait, this is way more fun. And one tenth of the price. And like I get to move to Italy. And that was the best choice ever. I think going to UNISC is a great way to start. And I did a lot of different internships. And with us at the moment, I can only take German-speaking people because our team is so small that everybody carries responsibility. And if I have people in the team, I just had somebody from the Ukraine. And first I thought in English it's fine. And I do have somebody from Argentina in the production, but it's for us, unfortunately, at the moment, a little bit too difficult not to have German-speaking people on the team because it makes everybody quite tired and there's miscommunication and they need help from other people because they don't understand or can't read, when there's deliveries. And so, unfortunately, at the moment, we can't.
So what's kind of, you said it took you a while to kind of get your to do your transition into the food system. So kind of if someone listening is interested in shifting to, chocolate specifically, what's kind of your advice on how they can get started in that field?
Personally, I really think it's all about making connections and getting to know people. So it's either you go wolfing on a farm and you start working on a farm, and on a farm, there's always people coming and you get to know people and people that buy cacao. And so you can either start in a farm or also find a place. If you go to a country where there's, like, for example, if you go to Hawaii, and in Hawaii, they grow cacao, but they also have chocolate factories, manufacturers. So then just starting to do internships, and everybody takes interns. If you're willing to work at a low cost in order to learn and to get connections, I think that's the best way. And you can't really learn how to make chocolate in school. I mean, there is food technology study programs, and we have food technologists in our team. But still, chocolate making in the craft world, how we do it, is really learning by doing.
And so how do you kind of think to shift? Like I know a lot of consumers, because of price, they're like, I just want to get the cheapest chocolate bar. Do you think education will continue playing a big role in shifting that kind of mindset?
Yes, definitely. And also, the last since the Second World War, we've been trying to get prices down of food so it's affordable for everybody at a lot of costs of, we all know, we've all studied it, or like, oh, the cost that has incurred for affordable food is now so big that we kind of have to go reverse again and start paying more. That's also healthier for us and the environment. And realizing that shift that we need to spend again more on food, I think that's just going to take a lot of time. And we're still far from it.
Which isn't, yeah, it's true. Bringing the value back to food, I think, is going to be a big challenge. Mm-hmm. What was such the importance of like food systems that kind of drove you to want to work in this field? Because I mean, it's not easy. It doesn't sound like, because chocolate making seems really hard and the whole process.
It's just because with food, I mean, we make decisions so many times a day. And with food, we just... You touch people. And I think it's like when you do important work and you do meaningful work, you really touch people. And I can see it on every day. I can see it in the team. I can see it with our farmers. I can see it with our consumers. I mean, our clients. So for me, it's very motivating and it's my driving force. Even if it's just changing people's realization, like one by one, but still I'm very confident and I'm like very happy about it every day. I love it.
Oh, that's inspiring. And I really want to eat some of your chocolate now.
Yeah, that sounds great.
So for some of our listeners, I know a lot of people will want to like support you in the work that you're doing and get involved with chocolate. So how can someone, you know, that might not be in Switzerland kind of support you in the work that you're doing in the chocolate industry?
Well, for sure, to stay connected. The best thing is to stay connected on Instagram or LinkedIn. And also to kind of just look around wherever you are. There's always local chocolate makers. And to go and see who is there in your community who makes chocolate. And to go and explore. And even if a chocolate bar is $12, but just go there and kind of understand it and try it. And doesn't mean you have to buy it every day, but still to just see what is there around and how can I support local chocolate producers wherever you are.
Perfect. And then is there kind of any resources around like learning more about chocolate and cacao that's online that you would recommend anyone going to learn more about?
Going to fairs, there's like the chocolate fair in the States. I've never been to that one, but we have the Salon du Chocolat in Paris.
Okay.
Also books. There's a very nice podcast that I was just listening to that is really, it's called Obsessions Into the Wild.
Okay.
A podcast. And also a book called Making Chocolate by the Dandelion, is a chocolate producer in San Francisco. And they have a book out which really explains how you can make chocolate at home. I think it's a great book. They talk about origin and how to make chocolate and recipes. And I can really recommend that book, Making Chocolate.
Oh, great. And one of my few last questions is kind of, what are the goals for La Flor in the next maybe 5 to 10 years? Like, where do you hope you are with chocolate and not maybe just with La Flor, but, you know, chocolate in the world?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of the goals from La Flor is to really, we're still very small. And we made 8 tons of chocolate about last year, which is not that, it sounds like a lot, but it's not that much. And I would like to buy more and consistent cacao with the origins that we work with, because what we can have a higher impact. One is a natural reserve, Tesoro Escondido in Ecuador. And we're just so close to them. And I know the more cacao we can buy from them and the higher price we can pay, the more impact we have. And the more we buy from them, the different they can plant more trees in the natural reserve. They have to do less forest deforestation. So, and that's my drive to sell chocolate. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, so that's kind of the goal, is really we want to sell more with that incentive of having an impact.
Oh, that's amazing.
I think it's just important for all of us to stay curious and open-minded and to think further than ourselves and to enjoy if it's good chocolate or bread or cheese or wine. And to just, I think it's the most beautiful thing to be able to share a meal with people with product. And then that's the thing, like the meal can be so simple, but if you just even open up a chocolate bar for dessert with people, it's actually enough. And because the value behind it and knowing where it comes from, I think you don't even need to bake the cake and do this and that and use the energy for it and like the time. I think if one can like realize the beauty and the simplicity, and then maybe it takes more effort to find the chocolate bar, and maybe you'll spend more time to like, you know, going to that shop to get it, or but you save the time in having to bake a cake, for example. I think the beauty is lying in the simplicity of the quality of, and that for me is kind of, it goes a little bit into being a luxurious product, unfortunately, somehow, but good quality products just take maybe a little bit more time in finding them.
Now I am inspired to go find a good chocolate bar.
Yes, I'm sure there's one.
Real quick, so what's the biggest difference you would say in taste between your commercial candy bar like Hershey's versus a good cacao chocolate bar?
When you take it in the mouth, it shouldn't be the sweetness as first. And like when you eat a Hershey chocolate, like it's just sweet, you know, and it's kind of, and that's what makes it so addictive, no? Because our brain reacts to it, and so it's not even the flavor, it's that sugar, and then you want more of that. And when you eat a piece of chocolate, something happens in your mouth, and it's like maybe smoky or earthy, and you're kind of like, oh. And also you can't eat that much of it. You'll eat a piece and be like, okay, I can't eat more. You can't eat a whole bar because it's too much flavor.
That sounds like a challenge. Okay, well, perfect. Well, thank you so much. And thank you again for, you know, sharing your knowledge about cacao and chocolate. I feel like now I'm inspired to definitely go find a good chocolate bar because I don't really have a ton of experience in this kind of food world.
Yeah, and it's really nice. It's like once you start, you'll like, you can try and like, and what's nice too, I mean, you'll spend a lot on a chocolate bar, but also it keeps a while. I mean, you shouldn't keep, once you open up a chocolate bar, you shouldn't keep it in too warm temperatures, also not too cold. So kind of red wine temperature storage is perfect, kind of cellar, or unless it's really, really hot outside, you can put it in the fridge. But in the fridge, there's always a lot of other flavors, and then you just have to close the chocolate well. But you can also keep a chocolate bar for a while. It'll start losing flavors after, I would say, a month of an open chocolate bar. But still, and then you can have different ones, and you have like your box with different bars, and it's a very nice thing once you start. Because that's the thing when you open up wine, no, you can't keep the wine so long. So that's a little bit of an advantage to having and discovering chocolates.
Okay, wow. Well, that is our episode. Thank you so much for listening to the Finding Your Future in Food Systems podcast, and thank you so much, Laura, for sharing more information about your company and your chocolates. Be sure to check them out online and follow them on social media. And you can find us at foodsystemsnetwork.org, where you can find all of our other social channels. If you're interested in being featured on the podcast or know an organization that may be, please feel free to email us at kim@foodsystemsnetwork.org. And we'd like to give a special thank you to the composer of our intro and outro music, Bo Vincent. Thanks again for listening, and see you next time.
Yes, my pleasure. I hope you can come to Zurich and visit one time.
Thank you so much.
Bye. Bye.